Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you. All right, Tom, let's finish off. Coach Cole.
Good job, guys.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome from Bite Size Books, please welcome Mike Capuzzi.
Tony, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Hey, Mike, Bite Size Books, it sounds a fascinating concept. I'm really looking forward to diving into it. But before we go, let's share a little bit of the Mike Capuzzi story.
Well, you know, as you can tell by the gray, I'm not a young whippersnapper much. Any, I used to think I am, but I've been in my own business, Tony, since 1998. I left corporate America, was with a software company that was very small that got very large. Interestingly enough, I have an engineering degree. So when I got out of college, I actually did engineering for a number of years, moved to an engineering software company. And then left that in 1998, right at the height of the dot-com bubble, when things were just going crazy, to start my own consulting company for other software companies. So I was a marketing consulting company for other software companies. Mm. So yeah, since 1998, I have been putting food on the table for my family by, you know, helping other business owners and entrepreneurs and corporate leaders grow their business through effective marketing.
Excellent. And in 2019, you started Bite-Size Books. So what was the concept in around that?
Well, you know, I formalized it in 2019, Tony. I had my first client book that I first client that I helped publish a book was in 2008. And between then and, you know, 2019, I'd helped several clients. But I really got serious about it as I'm sort of entering this, I don't know if it's the last chapter of my professional career, but really just focused on helping business owners, entrepreneurs, corporate leaders share their story, impact the world through books, which is nothing new. It's not too different. But what is different, Tony, is we only publish short books. So okay. These are, you know, they're real books. You can see some behind me. Here's one of our clients, an attorney. I mean, they're real books, but they're about a 1 hour read. So they're focused, they're tight. And they allow the reader, you know, the big promise of, hey, just read, take an hour, read my book, and, you know, I'll help you with this, that, or the other thing, whatever the book's topic is, which in this day and age, I'm not sure if you'll agree or not, but in this day and age, I think most people prefer short, pithy information before they invest a ton of information, you know, time and energy. Yeah. And these short books are a great conversation starter.
It's almost like there's a number of different competing formats out there at the moment. So I know that I have an app on my phone called 12 Minute Books, and it gives me a summary, and I can either read the book or I can have it read to me in an audio format. And then there's Blinkists and whatever out there, summarizing books. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between, say, a summary of a mainstream sort of leadership book that's going to take you days to pore over, and a bite-sized book?
All right, that's the first time I've ever been asked that question. So I know you're gonna ask me what book has had a profound effect. And here it is, Law of Success in 1924, a little bit different than our short books. I've read this book cover to cover. It's over 1,000 pages, Napoleon Hill. It was the precursor to Think and Grow Rich. Think and Grow Rich came from this about 10 years later. So I'm a history student also.
Yeah.
This is the kind of book you do a summary on, right?
Yeah.
So you're taking a big piece of work, you know, the typical business book is what, 200-300 pages, and condensing it down into a 12-minute read. Whereas our short helpful books, I call them shooks. So a shook is a short helpful book. It's written from the beginning, Tony, to be, first of all, it follows a very specific formula recipe that we could talk about. But it's really written to be, right from the get-go, a conversation starter, an opportunity for you to get to know me or our clients in a book format. So it's designed from the outset to be short, focused, and tight versus, you know, taking a big book and condensing it down.
Yeah. So if I was to take, so I'm just looking at this from a perspective of leadership development. So if I was to take a leadership skill set like communication, and as we know, there are so many different types of aspects that make up that topic of communication. And a lot of people, there's some great books out there. Crucial Conversations is one that I absolutely love and adhere to. It's a really good, strong book, and it walks you through formulas and frameworks and different methods and whatnot. But from a bite-sized book perspective, is it possible, and do you work with people that take that broader topic of communication, and then instead of having chapters, I guess, or sections within the book dealing with each individual thing, does a bite-sized book dive into like a specific area, and then there's the potential for a series? Is that
Absolutely. And it's actually, again, in my opinion, but I think today's reality concurs with this. Consumers prefer focused information. So rather than a 300-page book on communication at a high level, maybe it's just, I don't know, communicating with employees. And that would be a short book. And that author could theoretically have a series. So maybe that 400-page book is broken into four 100-page books. And the opportunity there, Tony, is A, now you have a library as an author. Now you are a multi-book author. Now you have the opportunity to market four different books, allow four different entryways into your business versus one. So yeah, I think there is the power of being able to take a wide range of topics and can chunk them out into short, helpful books. And just so you know, Tony, and I know again your books lean more towards a shorter book, but our books are anywhere from like 10 to 15,000 words, right? The average business book is 75, 100,000 words. So right off the top, you can see how much tighter they are.
So from your experience, who is your ideal customer? Who is the person that comes to you and puts down a bite-sized book?
Yeah, it's oftentimes they're what we call Main Street business owners. So here in the States, we call it Main Street. Your physicians, your dentists, your lawyers, professional practice and service business retailers. So oftentimes, Tony, it's a person who has a product or service that's very common. Let's say a dentist, for example, right? There's dentists all over the road, everywhere up here. And they're looking to differentiate themselves. They're looking to share maybe a unique way they perform dentistry that's different than their competition. So they're looking to stand out. So that's the Main Street business owner. We also work with folks like you and I that have more of a global audience. So we call them worldwide authors. So they are thought leaders, online entrepreneurs. And then we also work with CEOs and corporate leaders who also want to, again, have the power of a short, helpful book working for them.
So what are the advantages for a business owner in putting together a short bite-sized book? Do they so and let me preface this. So often I've heard salespeople talk to me about getting a book out is the new business card. So instead of giving someone a business card, you're going to give them a book. Is that part of what you see happening with business owners, that they're looking at this as part of their marketing
Oh,
collateral?
yeah, definitely. So, I mean, listen, even in 2022, in my opinion, books are still seen as objects of value, right? Here in the States, there's still bookstores. Obviously, Amazon and all the online retailers still sell books. People tend to, there's libraries still. People still tend to put a lot of value on books. We expect to pay for books. Whereas most marketing collateral, brochures, business cards, YouTube videos, digital books, digital downloads, most people don't expect to pay for those. So there's inherently a different way that most people look at a book. So as a device, as an asset, they're objects of value. Most people also tend to put weight and a level of authority, a level of esteem on the individual who's written a book. Yes, it's not necessarily magic. I believe most people can write a book. It's nothing, that most people could not do. But again, the average consumer, the average person still puts a lot of value. If you say, I've written a book and here's a copy and I'd love you to have it, automatically something changes in that prospect's mind when they're receiving it. So it's a win-win. And yes, I do believe books, printed books, still have a lot of opportunity for a lot of different people.
So if I'm a business owner or a young entrepreneur and I'm listening to this and I've been toying with the idea of getting a book out, what's the stages of the process, I guess, that I'd be looking at to get into putting out a bite-sized book?
Well, we have again, that engineer brain of mine, we've created a very step-by-step approach. So when you work with us, it's very methodical. We go from idea to printed book in about 8 to 12 weeks. So this is not an overnight thing. It's also not a two-year thing. It's a nice little sweet spot of time and investment. But really it comes down to, Tony, really thinking about, you know, what are your goals as the author? You know, what are you trying to accomplish with this book? And then what do you want your readers? And who is the reader, right? We really try to focus and get our clients to focus on, you know, not the world as their readers, but a very specific type of individual so that you can write your book to that individual. Typically, that individual would make an ideal client, an ideal customer, et cetera. So it's really, you know, a lot of energy on the front end. Then there is the writing process or the talking out process or the ghostwriting process. It depends on what the client wants to do. And then once the book is done, which typically I think is the easiest part, it now comes down to how do I leverage this in my business? How do I use a book to attract more ideal clients? How do I use it as a position, as a tool of authority? How do I get it on? You know, how do I get on podcasts, for example? So there is a three-part phase at a very high level. You know, the planning, the creation, and then the use of the book.
So 10,000 to 15,000 words. I'd really love to understand if there, and I guess that these sorts of stats are never available, because I know that my library, I've got a heap of books. And there's probably maybe 30% that are well thumbed. There's notes through them. There's
30% is good.
Been well used. But I'm also pretty confident that there's another 30% that sit in my bookcase pristine for the day that I feel compelled to read them. So is that the shift that we're seeing in the world in respect of how people read books or how they partake in books nowadays?
In my opinion, yes, for sure. I mean, I consider myself, and again, I read Napoleon Hill. This book took me a few months to read, and I'm a pretty quick reader. But yeah, I don't know about you, but I know as I've gotten older, like it would bother me back when I was younger if I bought a book and didn't read it cover to cover. But I find myself these days, especially with business books, nonfiction, by the way, that's what we're talking about, nonfiction, business oriented. But I find myself, if I get a book as a gift, someone sends me their book and it's a big, thick book, I'm like, and if it's not exactly what I'm looking for, it's like, you know, it's like you're 30%. It's going to remain pristine. The other thing is I tend to start books and never finish them because, again, they tend to be so bloated. The author keeps repeating themselves, especially with published books. When you use a traditional publisher, they have to maintain a certain page count. They have to maintain a certain, you know, look and feel. And that means that oftentimes there's a lot of bloat. I call them books with bloat, B-L-O-A-T. And yeah, you tend to get bogged down. I think these days people do appreciate, you know, I always say a short, helpful book, a shook, I can get on a plane in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and by the time I'm in Chicago, the book is done. And, you know, I feel good about that.
So you've read the book, there's some actionable steps in there, and you can start putting some of what you've just learned into practice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think it's a great concept. So how many authors or have you helped since you formally got started?
We're up, I think, over 140 now.
Yeah?
Yep. Again, we're not trying to, you know, we're not setting the world on fire at being this big traditional type publisher. We were very hands-on. Every client works directly with me. And the other thing I think is important, Tony, I've got this lengthy background in marketing and in direct response marketing, which is a bit different. These, our books, our shooks, they follow a very specific formula / recipe. So there's very specific chapters that I encourage my, in a very specific order of chapters that sort of wrap around the main content. So if you're writing a book on leadership communication, for example, It would be bookended by some very specific chapters that elicit response, that get the reader to really engage with you, the author.
Excellent, excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the ghostwriting process, because I'm not overly familiar with it. There's probably a number of people sitting here saying, well, it sounds great. I'm still going to struggle to get 10,000, 15,000 words onto paper. So how does the ghostwriting process work?
Yeah, and listen, for anyone thinking about ghostwriting, make sure you do your research. There's a ton, many, many business books out there have been ghostwritten. You don't even know that, by world famous authors. Because they're so busy, they have it ghostwritten, corporate executives, et cetera. I will tell you, it is a challenge, because what you're requiring of the ghostwriter is for him or her to get what's in your head sounding like the way you would write it onto, a computer, and then ultimately into a book. There's good ones out there. There's ones, it's just a process. It's a very iterative process, Tony. Now, with our clients, we encourage all of them to write their content or create their own content. Some of them speak it out. But I personally believe no one is as passionate, no one is as knowledgeable about whatever the topic is as you are. To expect a ghostwriter to get that, it's a challenge. It can be done, but it's definitely a challenge. So we encourage our own authors to write their own content. There are times when a ghostwriter is necessary, but I would just say, do your research and really expect it to be a much longer process, because you're asking another person to kind of get inside your head and write and talk like you do.
Yeah. And that would be, quite challenging, I would imagine, for the person who's actually trying to get the thoughts across. Unless they've got some real clarity around the idea and the concept, they're going to potentially waffle and go off on all sorts of distractions. So let's now, the last thing that I'm really quizzical about is the formula that some book authors are taught or shared about getting that number one badge, that number one bestseller badge on Amazon. So, and there's a lot of stock that's put on that, and there's certain ways that that people will persuade or manipulate whatever the formula is to make it happen. Talk me through the marketing, and can a person be guaranteed that they'll get a number one bestseller on Amazon?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because in a couple of my short books, I've actually poo-pooed the idea. Two of my books became an Amazon number one bestseller, and legitimately, like in legitimate business-oriented categories, I did a lot of work to get them to be there. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot of ways to game the system. I mean, is it that important? Amazon has really commoditized what it means to be a bestseller. They have thousands and thousands of categories, and all those categories have bestsellers. So theoretically, thousands and thousands of book authors can be bestsellers, and it can only be, maybe it's only for a day and you can proclaim it. So I don't put a lot of stock in it. I know some people really, it's important to them. I wrote a book, it's called The 100-Page Book, and it's about how to write a 100-page book, which is a short book. And I wrote that, Tony, very intentionally. It was a very, almost like a scientific experiment to see if I could become a bestseller on Amazon. So I really studied how Amazon's, and this was 2 years ago now, the algorithms worked, how they use keywords, how they use words that are in the title and the description. And that book became a number one bestseller in real categories, not like bogus categories that you just put it in when there's like two books in there. It was the number one bestseller for like 7 or 8 months. We sold thousands and thousands of copies, which again is not necessarily my goal with my books, but I did it as an experiment. So the answer is it can be done, and there's ethical ways of doing it. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of thought, and it's going to take a lot of front end marketing once the book is released and launched.
Yeah. I think a lot of people downplay the level of marketing that's required within getting a book out.
Absolutely.
There's almost a perception that you put it out and you'll make some money. But, once again, I'd love to see some stats. I know the level of sales that my books get, for example, and and I know that I'm certainly not basking on the Bahamas on the royalties that I get. So it is a challenge, and mostly my books are given away as like an introductory
yep.
when I meet new people, and you know, when they're solving certain problems. So I can certainly appreciate the concept that you've brought into the market, because I think that the fear of putting out a book for people is probably one of the things that stops them from writing it, because we keep hearing that 75,000 word, 300 pager that you've got to be sort of churning out. And so many people just go, mate, I know I've got a book in me, but I can't, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of discipline. I can't even channel my thoughts into what I'm going to do tomorrow, let alone what I'm going to do in this book. So I think that there's some hope and there's some optimism when people can see the success of the 100-page book, for example, and what they can then do with it for their own business or their own mindset. So I think that that's a fantastic thing that you're bringing out into the market. So well done on that. And in a sec, I'm going to ask you how people can connect with you, because I'm sure it's certain for sure that people will be wanting to. But in your journey, and you've had a journey of different areas, you've had you know, your marketing and your engineering, for example, who's been one of those inspiring people that you've that have been with you or that has inspired you during your journey?
Yeah, I mean, one of those questions that probably has multiple answers depending on how I look at my life, if it's personal, if it's business. But I would say one gentleman that's had a profound effect on me at a business level, Tony, and maybe you or some of your listeners have heard of him, a gentleman here in the United States, Dan Kennedy. So Dan is a world-renowned marketing expert. I got to know him at a personal level. I've been to his house. I've had dinner with him. You know, I've done work with him. I'm actually in one of his books. But he really, through the book, I met him in 2005 through a book. I bought one of his books, and it just led into this amazing relationship where we've done work together. I've spoken for him. He's spoken for me. I had 330 business owners in a room one night. He flew in and did a presentation for me. But he's had a profound effect on me. Even, you know, almost two decades later, still has a profound effect on me and how I think about business, how I think about leadership, how I think about communication. So yeah, Dan's, and we almost lost him about 2 years ago, but he rebounded back, and he's still out there helping people.
Excellent. Good to hear. With our journeys are filled with some great peaks and some demoralizing troughs as we traverse this journey of business life and leadership. Tell me about your relationship that you have with failure.
It's a personal one, right? So it's there. You know, I'm partially Italian, so I grew up in this, you know, Italian household, which was very vocal. You know, you see, I use my hands a lot, and I think that in nature, I confront failure pretty much head on. Like I don't shy away from it. I don't put my head in the sand. Like I confront it head on, especially if it's, you know, my own failure. Like I'm not one to shy away from it. If I make a mistake, I'm the first person to call it out. I try to teach my kids that. So I would say, you know, the relationship for me is I accept it. I don't let, Dan was actually helpful for this years and years ago of not allowing it to internalize it and really, you know, say who I am or define who I am. I used to speak, I learned how to speak on stage, through Dan. And my first couple times on there, I thought I was horrible. And it turned out I wasn't too bad, but I definitely made some mistakes. But I didn't let it define me. So I just, you know, confronted it head on, got better at it.
Yeah. Barreling head on into failure. I find that question always fascinating to hear back. And you're one of the very, like, I've interviewed over 100 global experts, and that's probably the first time I've heard someone say I'm going to barrel straight into it. And I think there's some real validity in that, because you know, I'm a sporting fan, as most people do have an interest in some level of sports. And the sport that I follow here in Australia is rugby league. And, you know, one of our greatest coaches said, if you're going to make a mistake, do it at full pace. So we're playing a game at full pace. So if you're going to make a mistake, don't be half-hearted about it. Make it at full-blown pace. And that's always sort of sat with me because, especially in the sporting arena, when you say we're going to run hard, we're going to tackle hard, we're going to do everything to the best of our ability, the same thing, I guess, should apply in some respects to what it is that we're wanting to achieve in business. Go at it full pace. And if you make a mistake, do it at full pace. And I just think that that's a great answer.
Yeah.
So you've already shared the book that's had a great impact. Why did it have such a great impact?
Well, and I've heard you say this on past podcasts, your own episodes. Like I have a large library over here to my right, and I have a lot of first editions, a lot of classic books from the 1920s, the 1930s, Dale Carnegie, you know, some of the ones I've heard you talk about. So I'm a believer in that too. There's the fundamental. Obviously, there's newer books. Another book that I really love, I don't know if you've read it, Start With Why. Simon Sinek, yeah. You know, that's a newer book that I think has had a lot of effect on me. But the Law of Success, which again is over 1,000 pages, Napoleon Hill, he's not my favorite author, but he's obviously a very well-known author. You know, I've read a lot of his books. But the Law of Success, I just found that, first of all, the way he broke it down into, like, was it 15 or 16 principles, I thought was just profound. And these are still timely. I mean, my two college-age daughters would never read this book, but if they were to read it would still have a lot of very relative content even for them today. So I just, it's a, you know, he wrote Law of Success, I think it was 1924 to 1928 and sometime in that time frame. And then from that became the much shorter version, which became Think and Grow Rich, which was released in 1937. Mm. So he learned that, you know, most people aren't going to read this big book. He had to have a shorter book. But it was just one of those books, Tony, when I read it, and I did cover to cover, took me a couple months. I just remember like stopping and going, wow, like, wow, you know, so.
Yeah, there's two things that stand out to me in Think and Grow Rich. The first one is that you do get that sense of, as you're working through the book, there's that sense of, this makes sense. And then there's that sense of, well, that's common sense. And part of the awareness that I had was that as you're reading that book, it's, you don't need to be naturally gifted to be successful. Mm. You've just got to follow some principles and have some discipline around some of the things that you do. And that's what helps drive success. So that was one of the greatest awareness pieces that I had as I navigated through Think and Grow Rich. So I'd imagine that, I've also read The Interview with the Devil from Napoleon Hill, and I find that just fascinating. And there's part of that book where he describes what a drifter in life is all about, where the devil describes what a drifter is. And I'm reading that and I'm going, that's me. That's me. That's me. That's me. And once again, it was that awareness piece of how we allow our bad habits and, you know, some of our comfort things to inhibit the life that we're designed to have. So, yeah, great book, great story. So what's the vision? What's the vision for Mike Capuzzi and what's the vision for bite-sized books?
The vision for Mike Capuzzi, I've got two daughters that are in college and I really want to see them become, you know, contributing members to society. So it's a daily mantra of mine where I'm encouraging them. My one daughter, my older daughter, actually, she published a book when she was in high school. I got her to publish a book, a short book. She's looking to do something in journalism. My other daughter's looking to do something in hospitality management. But regardless, one of my visions is I really want my two daughters to be valuable members of society as I believe it, which means you work hard, you add value, you help others, etc. So that's one big goal of mine right now, Tony. And then as far as business, it's just, you know, I work very closely and very at a very tight level with each of our clients. And it's really just a matter of attracting more and more people who see the value of working with a 20-year plus expert to work and get their book out. We have a very nice little business. And again, I'm kind of going to that phase of my life where I'm looking like, it's not so much about the money. It's really about just doing stuff I enjoy to do and get up. And I do. I get up. I really, it drives my nuts. We just had Memorial Day here in the States, and like, I'm doing a little bit of work because it's not work to me. I love what I do.
Yeah, I think that's always a good space to be in. Being able to do what you love doing and continue to enjoy it. And I think I speak with so many people that are at that level or looking for that level. And I think people can be surprised at times that you don't need to have this multi-million dollar bank account to be doing what you love doing. And I talk about the beach in the Bahamas as what some people may see as an ideal lifestyle. I'm pretty certain that you're seeing your lifestyle as pretty ideal at the moment because you're doing what you love to do and you've got a smile on your face as you're doing work. And I think if people out there actually smiled at work, that's going to be a pretty good life. So, hey, Mike, how can people connect with you? Oh, sorry. Yeah, no. How can people connect with you? That's the question.
Well, with your permission, I'd love to give your listeners the opportunity to read the 100-page book for free, so they can get it on Amazon. Yeah. Yeah. They can buy it off my website. But I have an online hidden version, Tony, plus a little quick start guide. So if you go to MikeCapuzzi.com, which is my primary website, there's also BiteSizeBooks.com, but MikeCapuzzi.com/gifts, G-I-F-T-S, plural. Yeah. You can just let me know that you heard me on Tony's podcast. I'll send you a link where you can read the 100-page book and another shook online for free. And I detail from A to Z, Tony, how to do a 100-page book in this little book. And we've had people read it and do their own books just like that.
Excellent. And I'll make sure those links are in the show notes. So I'll share MikeCapuzzi.com/gifts and hopefully there'll be a rush of people wanting to understand how to do a 100-page book. I think it's a fantastic idea and I wish you every success. And I sincerely want to thank you for coming on the podcast and investing in today's leaders.
Tony, thank you very much.
If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind, Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.